Welcome to This Week in ZA, the podcast where we talk about technology and pizza. I'm Coded. This is Chad.
Chad.
Today our guest is Billy Adele. The pizza is the protein pizza from Blaze. Every week we're here to talk about technology with technology enthusiasts and people in the industry. So whether you're here to talk about code or just enjoy the cheesy goodness, grab a slice and let's get into it.
Yeah, that was way better than our previous ones. That was.
Oh yeah,
really? I almost believe you're like professional.
Yes, I almost believe you know what we're doing. So, what do you think of this pizza so far?
I mean, the first part's good.
Yeah. It does have things that food eats on top of it. Mm-hmm. Concerned for your well-being.
It is.
The cauliflower crust is more cauliflower-y than I thought it'd be.
Agreed.
But it's good. I like cauliflower.
So, yeah. It's a little more flaky, or I don't know if that's quite the right word, but.
Mm-hmm. I'd say the last time I had it, it was a little more crisp.
Yeah.
It did travel a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Account for travel.
And this is the Blaze, what do they call it? The
protein pizza.
Protein pizza. It was picked by Doug. And one other guest we have this week is Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Brooks is going to be jealously looking at our pizza.
There was a little piece of crust on the floor that Brooks did eat while we were doing the intro. So, what are you thinking on this, on the scale 1 to 10? And this is an NPS scale. You want to describe the scale? I don't remember quite how we had it configured.
Something about 9s and 10s where you would eat it even if you weren't hungry. A 1 was you can't finish it. 2 is you almost can't finish it. 7's a pretty good pizza.
So, I just have to open by saying, pizza's not my favorite food.
Sure.
Like, all food is great, though. There is no food I don't like. My scale is going to be a little different. Like, this is, if I was having a real bad week, mm-hmm. and it was there, I would eat the whole thing.
Okay.
But it is not, I'm not just, like, going for this.
Sure.
So, I'd call it maybe a 6.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit better from the pie last week, which I gave like a mid 4.
Oh,
but
wow.
Not a lot better because the black olive still set me off. So I'm going with like a 5.
Okay. I think last week I was like an 8
mm-hmm.
for Yaya's local.
Doug got Yaya's?
You get to pick for the next person, so.
So it just needs to prove. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. So you get to pick for Jamie. Just be putting that in your mind.
Oh, we need to be nice to Jamie.
I think Doug thought he was being nice to you, by the way. But I would give this, like, compared to the Yaya's local, which was an 8 mm-hmm. for me, this is like a 4.
Oh. Yeah. I feel like my 6 was generous now that you guys throw your scores out. I was trying to be kind. It's like a 3 or 4.
Now that Bill said 3, I'm going 3. I'm backing her off. It's edible.
Like, I'm pretty hungry.
I stay 5.
Okay.
Yeah. We also have a second pie, the safe choice. This is the Blaze spicy pepperoni.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah, that looks good.
Spicy garlic bread as well.
Yeah,
that looks good as well.
I don't know if we want to do an actual rating on that one or just
should we do that one too? Well, we might as well since it's here.
I mean, I'm kidding.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead. Let's do this.
Now I cheated a bit because I had this one last week.
Mm.
And it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if they put there's like a hot honey drizzle.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw them put it on there or not. But that is really good.
Sweet. Napkins.
That is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's definitely a superior to that.
Yeah.
That would give us a significantly better score.
Yep. This I would eat even if I wasn't hungry.
Okay. Is that your 9 or 10 then?
Yeah, it's up there. It's pretty good. That's a pretty good song.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I gotta grab an extra bite of it.
This is really good.
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a thin crust guy. Thin crust. I'm a heat guy. A little heat. I'm a pepperoni guy. But this is
pretty much everything I like.
Oh.
Yeah. Checks all boxes. I'd say it's an easy 8.2.
8.2? Coda's always putting these weird numbers in there that are going to cause us problems later.
Sure. You put cream cheese on a pizza, It's an easy 9 to 10.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that might, you might have just actually informed what Jamie's gonna give her pizza. So.
Maybe that was my plan all along.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah, I think this is like an 8. You're gonna get the same as last week. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I would eat it. If someone said, let's go get this, I'd clearly be like, yeah, let's go get that.
Yep.
Previous one though. Previous one, I would have to be really hungry to be excited about.
Yeah, I'm gonna make Doug eat that.
Yeah.
All right, so we usually have a recurring question that we ask all of our guests. Easy one to kick things off.
Okay.
If you can recall, what is one mistake you made in this world?
Oh, gosh.
Could be funny, could be devastating.
Preferably funny.
Funny is good.
One mistake I've made in this world.
Other than this right now.
This feels like it's right up there. Gosh, pretty early in my career, so I'm self-taught, and I, you know, did a bunch of stuff in a fairly safe environment at the University of Nebraska, and then the first gig I took out of that was at a Silicon Valley .com startup, excuse me, and we built a platform that ultimately we were trying to sell to Microsoft. So we put it all together, we got it all running, got it all up running on our servers in Silicon Valley, a place called Exodus, had, you know, tested everything. We got over to Microsoft and we sat down in the conference room to show them this fantastic new custom builder product that we built for Microsoft Press, and their firewall blocked it. Oh. So all these executives are in the room and we can't show them anything. And all the executives absolutely failed this. It was a horrible moment. Now, it turned out okay, because we all just up and went over to the Redmond Conference Center, over where they were doing Xbox development, because they had drops in the hallway of the conference center that were outside of their firewall.
Okay.
And so it was all of these executives from Microsoft in their suits, you know, us all dressed up, all sitting on the floor. Huddle around a laptop.
No way.
as I did a demo.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But oh man, yeah, I thought it was over.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pretty big mistake. To like, note to self, kids, burn it to a CD. do not rely on the interwebs if you're doing an important demo.
This was back before Wi-Fi was everywhere, so you actually had to plug in.
Yeah, you actually had to plug in. And I get it. Nowadays you wouldn't receive a CD, but you know, burn it to a USB stick, run it local. Like, do not rely on anything external that you have important demo to do. That's fine.
Second question. How did you get into software? I think your education is biology. But which you have some great stories there as well, by the way.
That's true. I could have talked about lots of mistakes in biology.
And I thought that those are
it might be a different podcast.
It might be, but I still think your one story involving intentionally getting yourself sick is your best story?
It wasn't intentional. I was just really terrible at working in a lab.
Sounded like he got himself intentionally sick. But it was, regardless, a great story. I was a little disappointed you didn't go there earlier.
We'll loop back around the end, maybe.
Maybe at the end. That's a teaser for later. Yeah. Yes. But how did you get into software? You were like biology, you're making yourself sick, and you're like software.
Yeah. So all the way back in high school. You know, we got a computer lab for the first time when I was probably a freshman. They were all hooked together. And I figured out pretty early on that I could navigate the network and get onto all the machines. And so I started messing with people. And I figured out it was, you know, pretty fun to be able to kind of control these computers.
Oh, yeah.
And somewhere around that same time, I got an Apple IIe. You know, programmed a downhill skiing game. It was just the letter H that was moving back and forth down the screen with exclamation points down the sides that you just had to say between them. Okay. And if you hit the exclamation points, you're out of bounds and you're wrecked.
Much like a real ski.
Much like a real ski. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that.
Was that like Apple Basic? Basic?
Yeah, it was Apple Basic. And then I completely fell away from computers. you know, other things become more important to high school boys than the computers, and so I did all those things instead. And got to college, and the one thing that I had going to college was a 486 DX.
Okay, I was going to ask, SX or DX?
Yeah, I had a DX. Like
Kodak knows even what we're talking about.
Yeah, that calculator or what?
Yes, it's like a fancy calculator.
DI-86 or whatever.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a pretty decent computer for the time. But I had it in my dorm room. I didn't really do much with it. And then Doom came out. It was about the time I was living in an apartment off campus. And Doom came out, and I really wanted to play Doom. But I couldn't play it on the 486DX. I had to have a Pentium.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yep.
Okay.
So I upgraded the machine.
Was it Doom 2 or Doom?
It was Doom. Yep. And so I upgraded the machine to a Pentium so I could play Doom. And word got around the lab that I was working in, not the one where I nearly killed myself, the other one where I killed an entire line of MDCK, Mad Dog Cannon kidney cells. It's another great story.
Okay.
And I got fired. but word got around that lab that I had upgraded the computer and I was playing Doom, and everybody was pretty interested in that. And then word spread through the biology department that there was somebody in the building who knew computer stuff. Mm. And so I became the computer stuff guy.
Okay.
Ultimately, that landed it with Dr. Bill Glider, who was a really forward-thinking educator. He wasn't a researcher. He, you know, genuinely cared about educating kids and saw the potential of the internet. At the time, the university really didn't have any computer labs that were networked. Mosaic browser was what was on the machines.
That's going back.
But he had been doing a lot of reading. He knew that Netscape was coming out, and he knew that Netscape had all kinds of capabilities. He just needed somebody who knew computer stuff, because then he could start to offer educational offerings for his Biology 101 class. And so he asked me if I'd be willing to, you know, learn this stuff, and I said, absolutely, this sounds like fun. We lobbied, got the Mabel Lee computer lab to install Netscape on all the machines, and then install the Java virtual machine on all the machines. Java was like 0.6 or so at the time.
Wow.
And so I started programming Java fully to do Java applets.
Wow.
And so this is like very early on, and this applet thing was just a notion, and you had to have the JVM installed on all these machines so that inside of Netscape you could pop open Java applets and do interactive things. And so I built Java applets. This would have been, 1997. And so I built these Java applets where you could drag the organelles. So you'd have the mitochondria and the ribosomes, and you could drag them into a cell. And if you got them in the right place, you got points. So we gamified learning where organelles go in cells for these students, and you know, built a bunch of other stuff. And you know, I really didn't recognize at the time that this was kind of cutting edge, but it started to get noticed around the country, and so the university sent Dr. Glider and I all over the place. So I got to go to, you know, places like, you know, exotic places like Calgary and Calgary and Toronto and Hawaii, actually.
Ooh, Hawaii, that'd be awesome.
That was pretty cool to talk about this new language called Java and what we could do with applets and education, so that. That's kind of how I got into all this. Eventually bridged over to trying to use that same kind of technology to help people with disabilities. So I worked for the ADA 504 compliance officer at the university at the Accommodation Resource Center to try to use Java and other technologies to help students that have disabilities to level the playing field in college. And while I was there, I got recruited to this startup that I talked about before. you know, those. Pretty big allure, because at the time it was the beginning of the startup boom. You know, so there were lots of companies getting lots of money, and the one that I went to was actually a Lincoln-based startup company that also had an office in Silicon Valley, San Jose, and Pudong, Shanghai. We got, I think it was $56 million of venture capital. It was just wild. We had a cage in Exodus in San Jose, where we had just rack after rack of SunSpark, which doesn't mean much to most people that will be listening to this, because SunSpark machines were expensive. expensive. Like, I think back then they were 20 grand.
Yeah, those were
like
level machines.
Yeah, they were elite, and they were for running like Oracle databases, and so we had all this crazy hardware backed up, and you know, so I got to experience all this .com boom, you know, the pets.com, and you know, we were right in the middle of all of it, and so that's kind of how it all evolved and happened. All self-taught, all terrible mother back then. All the code is terrible.
One thing I've learned from today, though, is Bill knows Java. Remember that from later.
Very, very old Java. Like,
take
I had
it. Yeah.
Like, I stopped knowing Java about the time Struts came out.
Okay.
So
a little while, but you can relearn.
You need a legacy developer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The nice thing for me is it's a lot like C#.
Yeah.
I had a stint in the middle where I did VB.net.
That was my first one.
Yeah. I had no regrets moving away from that. I'm very happy to be in the C# world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the journey.
Cool. So someone that didn't go through a traditional pipeline to get here, if you could offer one piece of advice to that student, to that young professional, somebody who's looking to change careers, looking to learn some new stuff, what one piece of advice would you give them to start making that
move? Oh, gosh. Follow your curiosity. Nobody really knows it all. You're going to feel really unprepared, but if you just don't worry about what you don't know and worry about what you're curious about, you'll just keep moving forward. I think that's been kind of the story of like the whole journey that I took. It was, oh, that's interesting and curious, I'm going to worry about that. If you try to look at it through the lens of, gosh, I have to fill in these boxes in order to arrive at some destination, I think it'd be a grind and probably overwhelming. So I think fundamentally, you know, being curious is kind of the answer.
That curiosity, though, almost all, you know, like great developers are somewhat, you know, kind of curious people. They're always kind of diving in.
Want to solve the puzzle.
Want to solve the puzzle.
See the next step.
Yeah. You got to always be willing to experiment a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people get a little too caught up in the just trying to solve a perfect, you know, sometimes you have to try something a little different to figure out how to get there.
The other thing I would say, though, is at some point you also have to do come back and fill in the fundamentals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you can go out and experiment, and then eventually you have to come back around and be like, oh, okay, I can't build it this way all the time. I need to fill in some fundamentals of what I didn't understand.
It's all experiments that make yourself sick.
Yeah. I mean, that has been kind of the story of my life. So, yeah, I mean, we alluded before to my lack of skill in the laboratory. Couple of famous examples. The first one, I was working for a professor named Dr. Wiley. I was creating hybridomas to try to detect PR8 influenza virus in these hybridoma cells. And we were using these things called mad dog canine kidney cells, which are actually a very expensive cell line that he had to buy from another university. And we had a whole cooler full of them, like a nitrogen cooler, you know, all stored in Eppendorf tubes. And my first job was to take the first Eppendorf tube that we paid a lot of money for these cells, and actually grow it up so that we could freeze more of them, so we'd have a supply of them going forward for all the experiments.
So you didn't have to keep buying expensive.
So we didn't have to keep buying these expensive MDC casings. You know, so I got it under the hood, and I, you know, used all the pipetting and all the clean technique I could to, you know, grow this up in the containers of the solution. You know, grew it up and it looked pretty good, and then put it all in these little tubes called Eppendorf tubes, and put it into the cryogenic freezer, into the nitrogen, and then you know, started taking them out one by one to do experiments with, and every single one of them that I took out, I would try to grow, and they would die. And it turned out that I gave them all mycoplasma from my hands, and so I managed to kill an entire cell line.
Oh.
Of MDC cases, and I got fired. So that was round one as lab rat. Round two as lab rat, I was working for a guy named Dr. Siegelkazi. We were trying to detect Newcastle disease virus, which is a really deadly virus in birds. And it was so deadly that they actually had to have it in a what's called a biosafety hazard level 2 facility.
Oh, wow.
So to put this on a scale for you, biosafety hazard level 3 is where they do like HIV research. Biosafety hazard 4 is where they do like Ebola.
Oh.
So 2 is not,
yeah,
but it's more than 1. It's,
yeah.
It still has to have like negative pressure in the room, and you know, you have to be fully gowned up and like,
yeah,
fully like,
you don't want
there are things that you can catch.
Yeah.
Because like this virus that I was working with is what they call high titer. It's grown inside of eggs, and so it's, the virus is like really lots of virus per milliliter. And so I'm working with this virus, and I'm trying to do a reverse Dagwood sandwich ELISA, which is what it's called at the time, to detect this thing. And I managed to get myself Newcastle disease virus. So I gave myself a bird virus, which develops calcified cysts in your lungs that you have for the rest of your life. So
really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So I managed to give myself that. That was my last lab rat job. Like,
I mean, so you still have calcified?
Yeah. Yeah, I still have calcified cysts in my lungs.
They're like eggs, like bird eggs in your lungs.
Sure.
How big are they?
Not very big.
Oh.
But
still.
Yeah. You don't want them.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a teacher.
I was pretty sick when I gave it to myself. And it wasn't intentional, despite what you might believe. I just really suck.
You want the story.
Yeah.
I just really suck at clean room techniques, apparently, in lab settings.
We'll remember this going forward. No experiments.
But at least none that could kill people.
Yeah, none. Actually, that's a good rule in general. None that could kill people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. So next week's Jamie, and you're nominating a pizza for Jamie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to be nice to Jamie. I really love the Paisano's double pepperoni cream cheese pizza.
Okay.
It is chef's kiss. I'll be surprised if it's not 3 10 out of 10s.
Wow. 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Paisano's is very divisive, though. So.
Yeah, either you love Paisano's or you don't, but you guys are going to love it, especially with the cream cheese. Like that.
Okay.
Just.
I mean, that's got to take something.
Yeah.
All right. Tune in next week. We'll try that out with Jamie and talk about some more tech.
Like, follow.
Oh yeah, like, subscribe, ring the bell for notifications, comment below.
It's a little endorphin hit just hitting that button, so you better do it.
It's true. I do it every time. When we say subscribe, the bell lights up.
Or yeah.
The button lights up, so if you didn't notice that, it just did. Comment below on a funny story that you've had getting yourself sick, like Bill did intentionally.
Yes.
And if you can top that, maybe you'll get featured on the next episode or something.
Ooh,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
'Kay, I can't believe I forgot this story. This is the one Chad was referring to when he said I had a story about intentionally poisoning myself. senior year of college, parasitology class. It's pretty common going through a class like parasit that you start to wonder, do I have parasites? Because that's all you talk about is how common it is. And they also talk about the medicines that you take to actually clear most common parasites, and you also learn pretty quickly you can buy them at PetSmart. and they're fundamentally the same compounds as a human would take. You just have to do proper chemistry. and so I went and bought what I believed to be the correct quantity of Hart's Rocky Mountain Dog Warmer. proceeded to miscalculate the dosage. Mixed it into some chocolate milk, choked it down, went to parasit class, sitting in the front row, when every potential side effect listed on the box that could happen to you happened sequentially. You know, first the lightheadedness, dizziness, sweating, then the hallucinations, and finally the loose or watery stool. When the loose or watery stool hit, I jumped up out of the out of my chair, ran to the bathroom. And you would think that they would have been stunned by that moment, but instead the professor, the TAs, and the rest of the students followed me in knowing exactly what had happened and what I had done, and the first thing they did was grab nets to pull out samples and head straight to the lab to see, did Bill in fact have any parasites? I did not. So it was all for naught. nearly killed myself, got every possible side effect of it. Please don't judge me next time I'm giving a talk and I'm like, people shouldn't make errors in judgment.